I have no relationships to disclose. So what we wanted to do, this project funded by NIOSH as one of the expanded program grants, is focusing on the temporary help supply industry. And I wanted to just define a term here. This is one small part of the whole contingent workforce, which is everybody, usually defined as everybody who's not in a full-time standard employment direct or contract with an employer. So that would include people from, including agency hired temps to direct hire temps, seasonal workers, day laborers, independent contract workers, the self-employed, and the part-time workforce. If you added all those together, you'd be up to around 30% of the entire workforce. The agency-mediated part of this is only between 1 and 2%. But I wanted to focus on this because agency temps traditionally have been thought of as being dominated by office and administration, but starting about 15, 20 years ago, they started to expand out beyond those traditional sectors and are now in assembly, construction, manufacturing, warehousing, vehicle operations, you name it. And in fact, if you take together all of those more higher risk industries involving a lot of manual handling risks, there are far more in those industries now than there are in the office sector. Secondly, it's highly pro-cyclical, meaning that as the business cycle rises and falls, the hiring and the letting go of temps is even greater. And I want to jump ahead to a slide to show you this. And just the rest of these things are... The one nice thing, the one at the bottom, is this is the part of the contingent workforce we can actually see in our workers' comp data set. It's identifiable in Washington State with a special risk class code. So that makes it really nice for us. I'd have to skip over this. I don't have time. This just goes over just the method of matching between these temp risk classes, these temporary classes of workers agglomerated for purposes of setting rate premiums for insurance, and the ones on the permanent side. So we can get a good occupation-based connection between the kind of work that temp workers are doing and workers who have a permanent contract with an employer doing similar tasks. All right. Oh, in Washington State, we rate our insurance by the hour so we can get injury rates. Okay. This just showing you the explosive growth, really. Over the period from 1989 through 2007, temp growth rate 5% a year, doubling about every 12 years or so, versus the permanent sector growth rate about 2% a year, and very much more cyclical. Those gray bars are the recessions. More recently, and this is the same slide but up to 2014, you can see the big plunge in the most recent recession in temp, in the usage of temp. This is one of those features people have written about, that the temp workforce is kind of there to provide a buffer to protect the permanent workforce that employers want to hang on to and invest and put a lot more investment in. When they have a slowdown in business, the first people they shed are the temps, and they're also the first ones they hire in when business picks up. In fact, it's not on there yet, but 2014 would show a very rapid increase in the hiring of temps in the last 18 months or so. Going backwards. This is just showing the higher growth rates in construction and food processing, more higher risk industries than you would have for office services. So in this chart, I'm comparing the claims rate, the time loss claims rate, lost work days claims rate, which in Washington State is losing four or more work days, divided up by these risk classes, these industry occupational groupings special to Washington State that we use for rating insurance. And you can see the overall rate ratio is 1.32, 32% higher claims rates, time loss claims rates for temps. If I were to exclude the office service category, which is way out there on the right, but very low, it would be more like 2. Okay, I probably should do that in the future because nobody cares about the office services one, and it makes the whole chart kind of distorted. But the red bars, you can see the kinds of industries in which you have the greatest excess risk for injury, they're all the higher hazard categories. So construction's up there, machine operations, vehicle operations, assembly, food processing, and so on. The median age at injury for the temporary workforce is about 6-7 years younger than that for the permanent, but both categories are getting older. I did this chart 10 years ago, and it was about the same discrepancy, but both ages were a couple of years younger than that. It is a disproportionately male workforce, about 75% male versus on the permanent side. In these particular categories, which it's 62% male. Now, why that might shock you that the overall, the permanent side is 62%, but remember, we're not looking at the entire economy here. We're looking just at those risk classes that match, that was able to match to the temporary workforce. Okay, so the median time loss days per claim is much greater for temp workers. This is a median of 37 days on a time loss claim versus 22 days for the permanent side. And then if we were to look at the kinds of injuries, the type of injury that's occurring, it's very much driven by musculoskeletal disorders. That's the first one on the left. Then struck bys and falls. Some others that are especially high for temporary workers are the caught-in injuries and exposure to toxics. I would imagine cleaning agents, janitorial services, those kinds of categories. No, but administrative data has its limitations. It can only give us information about on the fields that the insurance side of L&I, Labor and Industries, is interested in gathering data on. So it can not tell us really anything about their exposures to occupational hazards. It can't tell us anything about differences between permanents and temporary workers in safety and health training. It can't really tell us much about the role of age and gender combined with exposures in leading to the claim. And it can't tell us anything about the characteristics of the host employers who hire temp workers and any kind of training that they deliver to these workers. And it can't tell us anything about the role of that triangular employment relationship that divides employer responsibility and incentives for providing health and safety training and supervision to the workers. So we wanted to interview injured workers to get more detail about what's going on behind these numbers. We selected claimants within 1 month after the claim opened. We completed 423 interviews to date, about a little more with permanent workers than for temporary workers, because we wanted to get at least a couple of permanent workers for each temp worker, matched by their risk class, roughly to their age, to their gender, and as much as we could, we tried to match tenure. And this is important. We really wanted to talk to permanent workers who were within the first year of the job and were injured. I mean, it's hard to get all of those because, although it's you have a higher rate for a permanent worker, 2 to 3 times higher, according to research by Breslin and others, you find when you're actually filtering by also, risk class and all of these combined, it sort of reduces your flow of claimants to try to reach, to interview. We have managed to complete 122 matched sets with at least one interview from each side, temp and permanent. And we've taken them through an interview covering the tasks they performed, the various hazards that they say they faced, whether or not they were screened for experience with job duties before they were given the assignment, whether that assignment changed once they got there on the job, how often that happened. The level of supervision they received, any safety and training and equipment they were provided, and how best what would work to prevent injuries, and how best to deliver educational materials. I meant to pause before that because I wanted to ask you guys what you thought the result would be for the hazard exposures.
Pretend you haven't seen this yet. Sorry about that. I even wrote my this twice, but I hit the button. Yes, just dial back. Well, you know, I think I was kind of thinking in my head that, you know, temps are used for the nasty jobs. They're there to protect the permanent workforce that the employers invested money in. So I was expecting that hazards, that temps would report higher hazards across some or even all of these various categories. And that's not what we're finding. We're actually finding it's a similar distribution. So, you know, the MSD, I shouldn't say ergo, I should know. You know, MSDs are the problems and ergo is the solution, but there it is. That's the highest one, manual handling, lots of that work. Machine operations and things like that, falls. But in no category did temp workers report a higher hazard rating than permanent workers did. And if we instead now look by risk class, and we sum up all of these hazards, there were 10 hazards. You know, those 10 hazards combined together and aggregate. I don't know what it means to add together these 10 separate hazards, but we did it anyway, just to get an overall sense of, you know, I don't know what statistics, the distributions of all of those are going to be really different. So when you add them together, it's really not proper, but. When you do that, you know, you get higher total hazard rating on the permanent side, statistically significant. And it's especially high for assembly. The discrepancy is especially high for assembly and food processing. So what does that mean to just kind of want to toss that out there and have you kind of think about that, what that means. Remember, these are hazards as reported, reported by the workers themselves. So it depends on their perceiving the hazard, right? And these are very different workforces. We know that they're of course different by average age. They're very different by experience. They are culturally more diverse background, about 10 to 20% higher. Levels of Hispanic, Latino workers. So there could be a variation by employment status along many of these dimensions, their youth, their experience. And awareness of hazards is itself a function of experience on the job. So time on the job is itself comes into this. So I also want to think of what would it, if it were the case that we really could have gone out there and looked at the hazards they were exposed to. And if we did, what if we found the same thing? That's a good question, because then it sort of pushes the explanation for the differential injury experience onto some other hypotheses. Lack of training, lack of screening, being sent out to a job that then is totally different from what they were screened for and sent out to in the first place. So. I'm not answering those questions here. I just wanted to raise this issue here with the hazard exposure, and I'm not saying it's a settled question in our research yet, because we aren't there to see it. We're depending on their own perceptions of these, but it may be the case that the explanation doesn't lie with differential exposure to hazards, but it's something else. When we asked them about their, I know 5 minutes, probably two now, they were much more likely to not have been asked about their experience than permanent workers were, either by the agency they hired them or by the host employer that they were sent to. Much less likely to be, much more likely rather, to have never received any safety training by their agency, this one's on agency, or by their host. And they're even less frequently trained by the host employer than by the agency. And we saw in the qualitative open-ended questions, they were all saying the host employer wants you to start working right away. You know, hit the ground running. They reported that the quality or adequacy of the training they received was lower, especially by the temp agency. They had a very poor opinion of the temp agency's training. There was not an issue with PPE. Well, at least, again, the perception of supply with PPE. This might suffer from the same problem as the hazard exposure issue.
But at least as far as we were able to perceive through this survey, we did not see a differential in terms of supply of PPE. Nor did we see a difference in perhaps the expected direction of how closely they were supervised. In fact, they report that they felt more closely supervised than the permanent workers on the site. Whether they were supervised enough, given their relative inexperience, is another question. We did not see a difference in terms of their perceptions of how important safety was to managers at the agency or at the job site. Again, okay. But some other measures I didn't make slides for. A little over a quarter of the temps said they experienced a significant change in the job assignment on arrival at the job site. These are the injured workers. Over half of these said this happened frequently, and over half said they didn't feel able to refuse. Most of the temps felt they had no control over their work assignments or schedule, compared to around half of permanent workers saying this. So the feeling of a lack of control is pervasive. No significant differences were found for either the physical mental scales, current health now and health prior to the injury, frequency of overtime, or knowledge of rights to workers' comp. In fact, it's bad on both sides. About 64% of both groups say they did not know how to file a claim before they were injured. Temp workforce is more culturally diverse. We conducted also a set of agency interviews, and I know I'm running out of time. Let me just quickly give you my gestalt of this. Of course, we only got into talk to the agencies that were willing to talk to us, and they said the way they checked to make sure the temp wouldn't get injured is that they conducted site inspections at the host employer, assessing PPE needs. Most thought temp work was more hazardous. They only provide general training and depend on the host employer to give more specialized training, and they all reported that they're under a tremendous amount of market pressure to hold down costs. That it's a buyer's market. The host employers have the leverage, and they're pressed. If they try to require more training than another agency, they'll lose the contract. Just in summary, there's a cause for concern because of this diffusion of temp work into higher hazard industries. We did, I think, try to start seeing if the hazard exposures issue is valid. We think it may not be, and we're moving more towards the issue of screening and training. The agencies are under tremendous pressure to reduce costs. And so really the next steps we want to take are going to be to try to get into the client side and conduct similar interviews with them. And we're also looking at what the temps say they would like to see in terms of the kinds of materials and in the formats they would be interested in having, including things like websites that are optimized for use on smartphones, wallet cards, and apps like the NIOSH Ladder Safety app. When we showed that to them, there were lots of appreciative remarks. So, thank you. Sorry for running out of time.